Hello, this is Jennifer with Talking Information Center, reading articles from the Dorchester Reporter. The first is, City Budget Poses a Test of Powers Between Wu and the Councilors. With less than a month before the deadline for voting on Mayor Michelle Wu's fiscal year 27 budget plan, Boston City Councilors are feeling pressured from multiple sides. On one side, there's a May 14th letter from the mayor's legal advisors reminding them about their limited powers to make spending changes. On the other, there was a town meeting the same evening in Roxbury where some councilors heard pleas to reverse cuts that were proposed last month in Wu's tightest budget plan since she became mayor in 2021. The meeting only added to concerns about the upcoming budget plan that were being aired at council hearings and rallies outside City Hall. The cuts range from youth jobs, food relief, and programs in the Boston Public Schools to some of the line items for the police and fire departments. This year, you see so many communities and advocacy groups coming together around the budget because a lot of them feel that everyone's losing something. District 4, Dorchester Mattapan Councilor Brian Worrell said in a remote interview on May 18th. So you see a lot more people being vocal and a lot more advocacy groups coming together around shared values and shared common goals. And that is something that I haven't seen in the past year. Even when the mayor filed the budget plan, she acknowledged the city was up against a fiscal perfect storm caused by rising expenses and a fall off in outside funding, and coinciding with a drop in property tax revenue growth from new development. Even before the plan was filed, city officials signaled a budget deficit for fiscal year 26 that they would later try to adjust with a $47.1 million drawdown from reserve funds. Adding to the fiscal turbulence is the shift in the balance of budget control by different branches of city government, thanks to a charter amendment approved by Boston voters in 2021. As a result of the amendment, the council still cannot increase the mayor's proposed spending total, though it can increase spending on some line items by cutting back on others. Previously, councilors could press for changes by rejecting the mayor's original budget, prompting the mayor to file a revised plan that would be approved by June 30th, possibly with a higher updated figure for total spending. When the city council started using its new budget powers 4 years ago, it tried to change the mayor's plan by voting to cut $13 million from the Boston Police Department budget. A year later, the council voted to cut the BPD outlay by $31 million as part of $53 million in amendments. In both years, Wu vetoed most of the changes. 2 years ago, with the fiscal year 25 budget, the council approved $15.3 million in amendments, most of which were blocked by the mayor. Laborious attempts at overrides, requiring two-thirds of the council, were mostly unsuccessful. Last year, for the fiscal year 26 budget, most of the council's amendments were approved by Wu, but they added up to only $9 million, less than one-fifth of 1% of the $4.64 billion total. According to the Boston Policy Institute, the earlier option for the council usually resulted in a larger percentage of the budget being changed. In comments May 16th, the BPI observed that Mayor Wu has seen more than 99% of every budget she has proposed in April become law in June, which is very different from previous mayors. Under the old system, mayors routinely rewrote several percentage points worth of taxing and spending from the April budget for the resubmitted June budget. When asked about the different ways for the council to flex budget power, Worrell said that there was room for reform in the newer option of amendments. So we need to look back and review the process, he said, to see what more reform can be created in order to make sure that when residents are coming to the council that we have the ability to address their concerns. Over the last 2 years, Worrell has chaired the council's main budget panel, the Committee on Ways and Means. He stopped short of saying whether this year's council should make changes through piecemeal amendments or revert to a blanket rejection. I would say that we should always put ourselves in the best position to fact-checking and double-checking and cross-checking all the information that is being provided to us, he said. According to a memo to councilors from the City Corporation Council, Michael Firestone, Michael Firestone, what was typical before 2022 is no guarantee. If the council were to reject the mayor's original budget plan between June 3rd and 10th, he warned, the mayor could file a revised budget when it would be too late for the council to take definitive action, which would allow her budget plan to take effect. Instead of applying more leverage, the council, according to Firestone, would effectively forfeit its ability to make changes through piecemeal amendments. The way I read the charter, Worrell countered, is that any time the mayor submits a budget, we then gain the power to approve, reject, or amend. I haven't seen anything in the charter that states otherwise, that we lose power after we reject. On May 18th, the mayor sent the council a supplemental fiscal year 26 funding request for $47.1 million to cover abnormally high costs for the past winter snow removal. This year's storm activity, the mayor told councilors, is precisely the kind of unforeseen, non-recurring cost that reserves exist to address. The mayor also filed a request for $22.9 million to cover BPS expenses for health insurance and utilities. Her letter said both kinds of spending have seen unusual and unexpected growth this year. Citing cost containment measures, Wu characterized the spending as one-time in nature for non-recurring costs. She noted that her administration has taken proactive steps to manage these areas of spending in our proposed fiscal year 27 budget and beyond to ensure that BPS can continue to invest in core academic priorities, even amid a challenging budgetary environment. But the combined $70 million request would be the largest drawdown from reserve funds since the pandemic, except for money 2 years ago to support a housing accelerator fund, which could also expand the city's tax base. The mayor's spending distinction was contested by the BPI's executive director, Gregory Maynard, who noted that past deficits had been covered without a supplemental appropriation, with enough money left over in fiscal year 25 for a surplus of $17 million. What happened in fiscal year 25, he maintained, was not a one-time occurrence. It is how Boston pays the overspending on police overtime and snow removal under Mayor Wu and before her under Mayor Walsh. That this is not happening in fiscal year 26 signals that there are serious problems within Boston's budget. Not covered by the supplemental appropriation is the more perennial deficit for public safety, including police overtime, which was tallied in February at $48.7 million. The mayor's administration has indicated that the shortfall could be made up by additional expenditure controls and other management of the budget. In a May 18th memo to his colleagues, the current Ways and Means Chair, District 6 Councilor Ben Weber of Jamaica Plain in West Roxbury, outlined a combination of budget readjustments that he ventured would create a fund of roughly $17 million for amendments without impacting services. The mayor has stated that a new budget would be the same size or smaller, he reasoned. If the budget is going to remain the same size, a vote to reject the budget is putting off the hard work of finding the funding for the programs we want to support. The very next day, at a public safety committee hearing on police overtime, and one day after the supplemental spending request, Weber straddled the distinction between recurring and non-recurring outlays. I think, as we saw yesterday, we have a $70 million deficit in our budget, he observed. A lot of that is because of increased costs, and maybe all that $70 million could be attributed to spending over budget on police overtime. Councilors brought up multiple factors in the spending, from BPD staffing levels to shift structures, even the possibility that mandatory overtime increased the number of voluntary retirements. Weber joined counselors in noting the toll on officers' families. But at the same time, he added, we have overtime spending here in the city that's having real impacts on almost every other aspect of the services we provide. The ability to make changes in the budget plan also hinges on the city's expected revenue. Earlier projections can be changed by revenue collections or the final figures on discretionary aid to cities and towns in the state budget. As of Monday, the Wu administration said that it was above revenue projections for fiscal year 26, but that things are starting to get a little bit tighter with more softening of revenue sources. The administration also acknowledged its own projection of very modest deficits of less than 1% in fiscal years 2028 and 2029. In her May 14th letter to counselors, Wu was even less encouraging about prospects for a higher spending total in fiscal year 27. The state aid revenue projections included in the proposed fiscal year 27 operating budget were based on figures from the governor's budget proposal, she told them. Since then, the House and Senate have each advanced state budget proposals with lower unrestricted general government aid figures, which would result in even less revenue for the city than previously anticipated, and any resubmission may even include a decrease in spending levels compared to the current fiscal year 27 proposed budget. Increasing the bottom line of the budget by either inflating revenue projections or drawing from the city's reserves would be fiscally irresponsible. In reaction to the supplemental spending request, District 2 Councilor Ed Flynn of South Boston, South End, and Chinatown reiterated his call for tighter spending in the pursuit of other revenue sources. With the city of Boston over 70% dependent on property taxes, over 50% of our land belonging to large nonprofits or non-taxable, and Boston now having to dip into reserves to cover a $70 million deficit after two straight years of property tax increases on residents over 10%, Flynn said in a May 19th statement posted on X, it is long past time that the Boston exercise fiscal discipline, fiscal responsibility, accountability, and transparency. In recent years, declining values for commercial property, especially in downtown Boston, have shifted a larger share of the property tax burden onto residential owners. The shift could also be affected by a legal challenge that alleges Boston's assessing practices have been unfairly skewed against commercial property owners. As the counselors consider ways to offset funding cuts, they have also floated their own ideas for cuts. In his social media feed over the past week, Flynn has called for multiple cuts along with a hold on pay raises for the city's elected officials. 4 days after the town hall in Roxbury, Worrell drew attention to the effect of budget cuts already planned by the mayor. I think sometimes that the numbers on the page might take away from the impact that's really happening on the ground, he said, and what will continue to unravel on the ground in a real way that will pit systems and communities against one another in ways that we do not have to. City lags behind soccer franchise in awarding white stadium contracts to minority-owned vendors. In February 2026, when Mayor Michelle Wu announced the $135 million price tag for the city's share of the White Stadium project, she touted $43 million in contracts awarded and committed to minority and women-owned businesses so far on the project. But a closer look at the numbers seemed to put that in doubt. On the city's White Stadium Supplier Diversity Initiative website, the breakdown between the city's portion of the project and that undertaken by Boston Unity Soccer Partners shows far fewer minority-owned businesses getting a piece of the city's portion of the project. Minority-owned businesses have gotten just 5.13% of the more than $89 million the city has spent so far on its portion of the project, according to the city's White Stadium Supplier Diversity Initiative dashboard. City Councilor Brian Worrell, who has reviewed the city's White Stadium contracts with minority business enterprises, says the Wu administration could have adopted the so-called Massport model, through which state officials evaluated bidders for construction and design contracts based on their commitments to meeting diversity and inclusion goals. What we have learned is that there was no real intention to follow the Massport model, he said. There was no program set up, knowing that barriers to minority contractors would present themselves. It was doomed to fail from the start. A spokesperson for the city did not directly answer questions emailed from the reporter, but issued the following statement. The newly renovated White Stadium represents the largest community benefits investment in Boston's history, the statement reads. With construction underway, this historic project is already driving local economic development and creating opportunities for our local businesses. We'll continue to work alongside community members and our White Stadium Supplier Diversity Advisory Group to ensure that our local minority and women-owned small businesses are connected to opportunities at every stage of the project. During a February press conference, Mayor Wu characterized the $190 million the BUSP plans to spend building out its portion of the project as a community benefit, with those monies being used to build out a beer garden, locker rooms for the team, a grandstand, and luxury viewing boxes that overlook the stadium. Boston Public Schools students and community members will be able to use the stadium most of the time, although BUSP will have exclusive use on 20 scheduled game days. Football will not be allowed in the stadium during the soccer season, which extends into November. While city officials maintain that one-third of the total contracts awarded on the project have gone to minority and women-owned businesses, that figure includes the BUSP portion of the project and lumps MBEs, minority-owned, in with women-owned businesses. BUSP has set a goal of 50% of all contracts on its portion of the project, projected to cost $190 million, going to MWBEs. At the outset, the city appeared to aim far lower, setting a goal of 17% minority and women-owned business participation in its portion of the project. On the city's website, which was last updated April 29th, women-owned business participation is at 13.1%. Boston-based businesses account for just 1.1% of the contracts awarded so far, with roughly two-thirds of the $135 million total the city intends to spend already awarded. These numbers point to exactly what residents have been warning about for the last 2 years, said at-large counselor Julia Mejia. Our office, the NAACP, Franklin Park Defenders, and community advocates have consistently raised concerns that the White Stadium project was never truly centered on Boston residents or Black and Brown communities. Now the city's own numbers prove it. Of the $64 million BUSP has spent so far, 20.4% has gone to minority-owned businesses, 13.8% has gone to women-owned businesses, and 18.8% has gone to locally owned businesses. District 7 Councilor Minyard Culpepper attributes the disparity between the city and BUSP's numbers to ordinances that mandate that the city use union-affiliated contractors. Because Blacks, Latinos, and Asians have long been underrepresented in the Boston area building trade unions, it's more difficult for the city to meet those numbers, he said. What we've been really focusing on is the BUSP numbers, he said. I'm not disappointed with their numbers. Culpepper filed an ordinance to create a minority business enterprise procurement readiness pilot program to provide local contractors with a capacity building program aimed at enabling them to bid on large city contracts. It's unclear whether such an initiative could be deployed in time to allow local businesses to bid on portions of the ongoing $325 million White Stadium construction project. Too often, MWBEs are shut out before they even get a chance, lacking the capital, technical capacity, certifications, or union affiliations just to be eligible, Culpepper said in a statement emailed to the reporter. That is not a failure of local businesses. That is a failure of the city to invest in them. But Wuerl says the city could be doing better now, citing the mass port-controlled project that produced the Seaport's Omni Hotel, a project on which Black-owned Janey Construction served as a general contractor in a joint venture with Turner Construction, also a Black-owned firm. This is 2026, he said. We have the Kroc Center as a model. We have Massport and the Franklin Cummings Tech Building as a model. We chose not to follow them. It has been a missed opportunity so far. Eighteen-year-old suspect shot girlfriend's mom in head, wounded another man on Mother's Day. Boston police have arrested a suspect in a gun attack on Kingsdale Street on Sunday evening that left two people wounded, including a 42-year-old woman who suffered a gunshot to the head. Janelle Sumler, 18, of Dorchester, was arrested by the Boston Police Fugitive Unit on Wednesday afternoon around 1:30 p.m., according to a BPD statement. District Attorney Kevin Hayden's office says Sumler is the boyfriend of the female victim's daughter. At his arraignment this afternoon, Judge Nicholas Brandt ordered Sumler held without bail pending a dangerousness hearing May 21st. He is charged with assault to murder, 2 counts, carrying a firearm without a license, possession of ammunition without an FID card, and discharging a firearm and striking a building. Sumler has been sought as a suspect in the initial canvassing of the neighborhood, with police even visiting his home near Codman Square. The shootings took place around 6:45 p.m. on Sunday, according to Hayden's office. A 42-year-old woman was shot inside 69 Kingsdale Street. He then allegedly shot a second victim, a 42-year-old male, in the arm and leg. Witnesses identified Sumler as the shooter. As if this set of facts isn't tragic enough, the reality of these victims being shot on Mother's Day adds another level of shock and sadness, D.A. Hayden said in a statement. I pray for the recovery of both victims, and I believe a dangerousness hearing is perfectly appropriate in this act of terrible violence. The Boston Police Department's homicide unit says it continues to investigate the facts and circumstances surrounding this incident. Anyone with information should contact the homicide unit at 617-343-4470. A BPS program that helped 3,000 families avoid homelessness is surprised by a major funding cut. A new study showed that a partnership between Boston Public Schools and support organizations helps families avoid homelessness, increases student school attendance rates, and improves parent and child well-being. A few days after the study was published, the program lost nearly a fifth of its funding. The Early Homelessness Intervention Program provides housing support and other resources to families that experience a job loss, income change, or other challenges before they could experience homelessness. The program has served 3,000 families since 2019. EHIP is run by a partnership between BPS, Family Aid, an organization that works to prevent homelessness, and United Way of Massachusetts Bay, a nonprofit philanthropic organization. Ellen Dickinson, the Senior Vice President for Research at United Way of Massachusetts Bay and an author of the study, said preventative housing support solves more problems than housing instability alone. The earlier that families can get support to avoid a destabilizing move, the better off their housing stability will be, the better off their well-being will be, and the more engaged their students will be in school, she noted. More than 1 in 10 students enrolled in Boston Public Schools last school year were homeless at some point during the school year, Dickinson said. The study, led by the Boston College School of Social Work, found that families in the program had increased housing stability. Students in the program saw a decrease from 61% to 52% in rates of chronic absenteeism, which is defined as missing at least 10% of school days. Parents said physical and mental health improved too. Stacy Perez Ives felt clueless when she needed help. Then she was referred to EHIP. A single mother to 2 girls under the age of 5, Perez Ives has been part of EHIP since the end of last year. With the program's help, she applied for state housing support, received daycare assistance, and found employment. She works at a preschool where, she said, she's learning how to be a better mom to her daughters, Zulema and Aliani. Don't be afraid to speak up and ask for help, she said. There are resources out there, and when you do have them, take them to your advantage. Families referred to the program by school staff were invited to participate in the study with the Boston College School of Social Work. Over the span of 2 years, more than 100 families from BPS schools were periodically surveyed over the phone and online. The reports tracked families' emotional and financial well-being and students' attendance and performance in school. Researchers hope the study's findings will provide evidence of the value of a school housing partnership, said Jessica McCabe-Johnson, director of the Family Housing Hardship Program at Boston College and an author of the study. Having EHIP as something that school staff can push across the table to families really furthers the relationship and trust that families have with the school, said Kadan Harris, assistant director of the Department of Opportunity Youth at BPS and an author of the study. Harris works to connect students and families who face homelessness with outside support organizations like Family Aid. He also aims to foster an attendance culture for students. BHIP costs about $4.2 million annually, said Larry Siemens, president and chief executive officer of Family Aid. Just days after the research on EHIP was published this month, Siemens said $750,000, or about 18% of EHIP's anticipated funding, was cut for the upcoming school year. He said that Family Aid was informed by the BPS administration that its $750,000 contract for the program had been cut from the upcoming school year budget. Where the $750,000 elimination had come from and who decided to eliminate it is unclear. Repeated calls to the school committee seeking clarification went unanswered. A spokesperson for the governor's office said the program's funding came from the city. A spokesperson for the mayor's office declined to say where the funding came from, told a reporter they would look into it, and then stopped responding to phone calls. In a statement to the reporter, the Boston School Committee wrote, "We deeply value Family Aid's program, and we are working to identify funding for fiscal year 27. On a positive note, EHIP recently received a $250,000 grant from the TD Charitable Foundation, and Siemens said Family Aid will try to close the remaining $500,000 gap. People living in poverty are probably facing the most difficult time in American history, he said. Entities like governments need to make decisions where they're going to invest and support the most vulnerable with the very best proven programs. He noted that the program will continue. It's a question of whether or not it will remain as robust as it is."